listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 950 AM.
Good morning. I'm Cardinal Francis George. For the next hour, the Archdiocese of Chicago will be hosting discussions on issues, people, and associations that touch our lives. Welcome to the Catholic Community of Faith.
Good morning, everybody, and this is Bob Gilligan of the Catholic Conference of Illinois, and thanks for listening this morning as we have a beautiful day here in Chicago as we seemingly wind down the summer for some, but for others who are just continuing the summer traditions, and even though kids are back in school or preparing to go back to school, the weather is sure fine, and it's awful nice to be able to enjoy the great outdoors as we have this past weekend and hopefully this week. So thanks for listening, everybody. We have an interesting show here this morning as we prepare for the upcoming week. There's been a lot of stories about various issues that we've been involved with recently. People may have read that something we've talked about on these very airwaves very often was the lawsuit that we have filed against the state of Illinois with regard to Catholic Charities being able to continue in foster care. And it looks like we had a setback last week when Judge Smith in Sangamon County ruled that the state does not, in effect, have to contract with agencies such as Catholic Charities. And at least for the short term, I think we're perceiving this as a temporary setback in our continuing efforts to continue in the public square and doing ministries such as serving the poor and healing the sick. And today, I think what we want to talk about here basically are two issues. One of them continues along those themes of how do we engage in the public square? How do we continue our ministries, sometimes taking public funds to do so, sometimes not taking public funds to do so, to heal the sick and to serve the poor and to educate the young, for that matter, and many other ministries that the Catholic Church is engaged with. So we're going to talk for the first 20 minutes, half hour or so, about an issue that does pertain to religious liberties, which is something that's coming out of Washington, D.C., with the Department of Health and Human Services of President Obama issuing some regulations that have caused a lot of concern in the Catholic community with regard to the definition of religious employer and how it could affect Catholic health care. And that's going to be on our docket for the first 20 minutes, half hour or so. And then at the second part of the show from about 9:30 on, we're also going to talk about another issue that's been going on in terms of national significance, which is a lot of news coming out of Washington, D.C. with regard to a program called Secure Communities and what the departments of the Obama administration is doing with regard to immigrants and when they're detained, what their rights are, what their rights are not. There's been a lot of news about that, and we're going to be delving into that at the 9:30 hour. And at that point in time, we're going to be joined by some experts who can shed some light on it. We're going to be joined by Allison Posner of the Catholic Legal Immigration Network. Mark Fleming will be in studio. He's an attorney with the National Immigration Justice Center, and also our very own Mary Lou Gonzalez, who is an immigrant education coordinator for the Archdiocese of Chicago, who can share some personal stories of what she's been through to serve the least among us, those immigrants. But before we delve into that topic, we want to go back to the first part of our show. We're lucky enough to be joined this morning by two people who have particular expertise in healthcare and related ethical issues. On the phone with us, we have both Patrick Cascione, who is the executive director of the Illinois Catholic Health Association. And also we have Erica Latham, who is the director of clinical ethics at Resurrection Healthcare, which is a chain of hospitals up here in the Chicagoland area. Good morning to both of you. Are you on the line?
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Erica.
Bob.
I trust that you had good weekends, both of you, I hope.
Yes, it was beautiful.
Great, great. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about the issues that I was trying to frame at the beginning of the show. And I think what I had led off with was a mention of the Catholic Charities lawsuit, which was a temporary setback in our ability to continue contracting with the state. And kind of the subtext of that whole conversation is how does that affect what rights do religious organizations have as they engaged in services to serve the poor, heal the sick? Patrick, maybe we could start out with you a little bit about what is going on with Washington. I know this is coming, sort of the beginning of our story is with the healthcare reform bill and what President Obama and Congress passed back in, was that last year? It seems like it was 10 years ago. Wow, it seems like it was so long ago. But maybe you could start us off there because I think this rule is stemming from that and what the problem is.
Bob, that's correct. And you're right. The first of all, the issue here at home on Catholic Charities is directly related to what's going on in Washington. And the origin of this, as you said, goes back to March of last year when the Congress passed and the President signed the health care reform legislation. We advocated very strongly for strong conscience language in that bill, as well as strong language around abortion and pro-life. Unfortunately, we were unsuccessful in getting exactly what we wanted, and now that's coming to fruition. Our worst nightmare is that based on that bill, the Department of Health and Human Services had to present guidelines on prevention, healthcare prevention procedures. And one of those procedures, apparently, that they've determined is contraception and sterilization. So they see this now as a preventive service of which any health plan or employer providing health care has to cover sterilization and contraception in their plans. Now, the conscience issue in there is that you know, we're saying that we need conscience protection as a religious organization from providing these services. They're going to put out a they have put out a regulation. We have until the end of September, September 30th, to respond to this, and we are going to respond to it. But the real problem is how they determine what a religious organization is. And if I could just briefly say, In the current regulation that we're responding to, they're saying that you have to employ primarily persons who share your religious tenets, primarily persons who, the organization serves and hires people who primarily serve your religious tenets. And the organization is a nonprofit organization as described through the IRS. Well, we, as hospitals, we do not just treat Catholic patients. We don't just employ Catholic employees. So under their definition of what a religious organization is, we do not qualify. So they're taking a very narrow, both at the federal level and at the state level, very narrow view of what is religious. Basically, it's your church on the corner. You have to be proselytizing to your religious community. And, you know, with higher education and hospitalization, that's just not the case. So we don't fall under the conscience protection, and if this regulation stands, we have to provide contraception and sterilization coverage to our employees.
We're talking with Patrick Cascione of the Illinois Catholic Healthcare Association and Erica Latham of Resurrection Healthcare Systems. If you want to ask them a question or join the conversation, the number is 312-255-8408. That's 312-255-8408. Patrick or Erica, I thought the purpose of the healthcare reform act that was so highly publicized was to try to afford healthcare to individuals who don't currently have it. What does this have to do with that? If we're trying to expand healthcare to people who currently don't have it, which I think we all agree is a laudable goal and should be done, how do we get into a situation where the government is trying to dictate what's in a healthcare plan? Why those two are not necessarily related at any level?
Erica, if I can just go first, you know, this just came out of sort of cost savings. I mean, when you look at prevention, you can make the argument that good preventive services early on, up front, with no cost, would save the healthcare system money in the long run. So I think there is some logic to it, but when you get into determining that pregnancy is an illness, that it's something that needs to be prevented, then you get into dicey waters. But that's where the genesis of this, at least on the prevention side, it was to really a cost-saving effort to get people in early, treat their symptoms earlier at a lower cost, and that's how that ended up in the reform package.
It seems like that, though, based on what you're saying, is that the government is what's going on here is the government is trying to dictate what is and is not in healthcare plans, and that's different and separate apart from trying to expand healthcare coverage to those people who don't have anything, a plan at all. So in essence, what we have here is the state trying to dictate what's in the healthcare plan, and now what you're saying is that not only are they trying to do that, but they're trying to dictate who qualifies and who doesn't. I guess my question is, at what point in time can an employer say to the federal or state government that they have a right to be left alone and afford health care as the best way they see fit to their employees?
That is the question, and that's one of the reasons that this health care reform legislation is under legal review. I mean, can you mandate that someone buy insurance? Can you mandate that they buy this particular insurance? And that's, you know, a question for the courts. I mean, can the federal government dictate to private industry and to private individuals what they must buy and what they must provide? And that's at the core of much of this challenge to the healthcare reform bill, and we'll see what the courts say.
We've seen a little bit, as Patrick had outlined, a little bit some of the problems of those, kind of at a higher level. Erica, what would this mean for Resurrection as this goes forward? How can you operate in an environment like that where the state is telling you that you are not a religious entity?
Well, this is deeply troubling for us, Bob, as you can imagine. As Patrick pointed out, the conscience protections in this mandate are simply inadequate. It gives lip service to conscientious and religious objections without actually protecting those who really need it. As Patrick had mentioned before, Catholic hospitals, the majority of Catholic hospitals and Catholic social service agencies wouldn't qualify as a religious employer because we employ so many non-Catholic physicians and nurses, and we serve large groups of patients who are not Catholic but are Protestant or Hindu or Buddhist, and it's because of our commitment to the gospel and to care for every human being regardless of their religious background that we act in such a way. So it would be contrary to Catholic social teaching not to do this. I would also argue that it would be contrary to common sense to stop serving patients who are not Catholic. And then, as Patrick had mentioned, too, the bill classifies sterilization and contraceptive services as preventative services, which I find rather odd, since fertility is really not a disease. It's a sign of health. Those who are suffering from infertility know this very, very well, that when somebody is able to have a child, this is not a sign that something is wrong, but this is a sign that something is very right. Now, that being said, there can be some good reasons to avoid pregnancy, and there are ethically appropriate ways to do this, but what HHS is proposing does not cover those kinds of ethically appropriate ways to avoid pregnancy at different points in time. I would also just add that in the HHS mandate, sterilization procedures and contraceptive methods have to be provided to all women of reproductive capacity. And all of the possible FDA-approved contraceptive methods have to be offered. And this includes methods that work by preventing implantation of a newly formed human embryo into its mother's womb. So these aren't contraceptives per se, but these are actually abortifacients. That they work, they're functional, because they are able to cause the death of a newly formed embryo. For example, the FDA has approved IUDs as a contraceptive device, and under the HHS mandate, this would be offered. The drug Ella, which is a well-known abortifacient, would also be covered under the mandate. So it goes beyond contraceptives to cover abortifacients as well. But I would just like to point out that the HHS mandate does explicitly say that it won't cover abortifacient drugs. So one might ask, well, how could this possibly be that they would cover Ella and they would cover IUDs, these drugs that have an interceptive effect in the name of contraception? And it all really goes back to the way that they define conception.
Mm-hmm.
You might be familiar with this history. Up until the 50s or 60s, it was pretty broadly accepted that pregnancy began at the moment of conception. But in the 50s and 60s, when many became concerned about the growth of the population in the world and these major population control programs were beginning to be launched, a physician by the name of Bent Boving proposed that there would actually be a social advantage to changing the definition of pregnancy. In such a way that would exclude the embryo in the pre-implantation phase from being the grounds on which somebody would be considered pregnant. So he suggested that pregnancy be defined at the moment of implantation of the embryo rather than at the moment of conception. And you can see how the logic goes here. If you don't have a pregnancy, then you can't have an abortion. So it's just a matter of changing the definition. So bringing this up to our current day and age, the HHS can say, in light of this new definition of pregnancy, that they're not providing abortifacient mechanisms. But the reality is actually the same, that the embryo is most likely going to die as a result of the insertion of this IUD or the use of the drug Ella. The embryo doesn't change at all before and after implantation.
So in essence, we have this regulation coming out of Washington that not only tells us that you'd have to change the mission of who you serve and who you employ, but now it also tells you that you have to violate your own religious ethics, it seems like. So there's a lot in this rule that I think needs to be clarified and to change and perhaps stopped. We have to take a quick break. If you want to join the conversation, the number is 312-255-8408. This is Bob Gilligan. We're talking with Patrick Cascione and Erica Latham about the HHS regulation that's just come out that has some problems for religious organizations, both in its spirit and its intent. And so we're trying to make you aware of this so you can join our advocacy efforts in helping to change it. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this brief message.
Hello, I'm Lisa Pilato, the director of the Catholic Charities Junior Board, and this is the Junior Board Mission Minute, 60 seconds of the latest and greatest updates on events and opportunities for you to get involved. Summer's not over yet, and the Junior Board's calendar is jam-packed as usual. We will play bingo and share stories with the senior citizens living at Ozanam Village on August 7th, package food for our emergency assistance programs on August 16th, and serve supper to the veterans at Cook's Manor on August 21st. At the end of the month, we hope you will cruise with us for a good cause at the 9th Annual Boat Cruise on the Innisfree. Music, food, and open bar on August 26th from 7 to 10 p.m. for $65 a ticket. These events are open to all Junior Board members and friends. There's always a way to help your neighbor at Catholic Charities. Consider joining our Junior Board. For more information on these events and others, call 312-655-7932 or visit CatholicCharities.net. And of course, stay tuned for the next Junior Board Mission Minute.
Real men answer the call to the priesthood. Is God calling you?
You know, I'm honored to be a priest for the Archdiocese of Chicago. I think it's great.
There's a desire to want to give back and to help and to serve those who are especially in need.
I think there's a wonderful opportunity for us to bring good news to a world that's very much in need.
When I experience through my ministry someone being brought closer to the Lord, it's an exciting, thrilling moment.
If you feel God's call to a priestly vocation, contact us at 312-751-8298. Or visit our website at chicagopriest.com. John Paul II once said,
Do not be afraid. Open your heart to Christ. The deepest joy there is in life is the joy that comes from God. Jesus is the hope of the world. The people are calling. The world is calling. God is calling. Answer the call to the priesthood.
The Catholic New World has been your faith resource for well over a century. Archbishop Patrick Feehan recognized the need for a strong Catholic voice in 1892 and launched Chicago's first Catholic newspaper. Bishop Feehan named our Catholic newspaper using a theme from the Columbian Exposition, the New World that gave people hope for a brighter future. Today, the Catholic New World is better than ever. It's a rich and diverse resource for Chicagoland Catholics with stories of faith, hope, and inspiration. Cardinal Francis George and our team of columnists offer compelling insights on spirituality, catechesis, and evangelization. Visit our website at catholicnewworld.com. View our photo gallery, catch up on the latest news, and while you're there, subscribe to the Catholic New World or call 312-534-7777. Our look has changed, but we are still your faith resource. Subscribe now to the Catholic New World.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Bob Gilligan talking about a healthcare regulation coming out of Washington, D.C. that is being proposed by the Department of Health and Human Services under the Obama administration. And we've talked a little bit about what that regulation entails and what it contains. And I think what we want to talk about a little bit now is, well, there's a couple things we can do about it. But I think one of the things that, if I could speak for sort of people out there listening to the show where they're a little confused, is there's regulations and then there's laws and who to contact and that sort of thing. There's legislation out there that would help remedy this situation in part, right? That's being introduced in Congress?
Yes, it's the Respect for Rights of Conscience Act of 2011.
Erica, maybe can you talk a little bit about that, like who's got it and where it is in the process and all that? Because that's an important piece of legislation.
Sure. So this is a bill that we're seeing both in the House and in the Senate. It goes under the same name, Respect for Rights of Conscience Act of 2011, and it would essentially strengthen conscientious protections for those who object on the basis of religious reasons or on the basis of conscience.
And I think what you're seeing going on right now, especially in Washington and here in Illinois, is a whole movement to enact legislation or rules or policies that goes against the grains of what some religious organizations believe. And in doing so, those proponents of those regulations and laws know that we can't do certain things, and it's against our conscience, and it's just against our belief system. And I don't know, I just get a little concerned about, as we go into the future here, is are we on a new wave of secularization in the healthcare and social services arena?
Bob, I'd like to take that one.
Yeah, go ahead, Patrick. Sure.
This is a huge red flag. Both the Catholic Charities...
the lawsuit,
Right, the civil union legislation and the option not to refer out and give us a conscience, and also with the healthcare reform regulations around contraception and sterilization. This is just the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
People ask me, why are they doing this? And it's because there are people out there that want to see religion, anything in particular Catholic religion, out of politics, out of policy. If this continues, as Erica said, I don't see how Resurrection Hospital or other Catholic hospitals can continue to provide the services we do if we're mandated to do these things. Because the next step is, well, then you have to provide abortions.
Yeah.
We put out a regulation, it passed, you have to do it. You know, there's no conscience protection, you just have to do it. And I think that's where a lot of people on the other side of this issue are pushing. And at this point, they seem to be winning. And I appreciate Erica mentioning the legislation. It is there. Just to be realistic right now, between now and the next election, I don't think we're going to see a lot out of Congress. And
mm-hmm.
even if we did, you got a Democratic Senate that we tried to get this language in to the healthcare reform bill a year ago, and they rejected it out of hand. So I just don't have a lot of faith at this time. But I do encourage people to be vigilant on this, and I know we are, and Eric is, writing response to the regulations, working toward the legislation. But it's going to take everyone out there that's listening on this program to understand the real consequences as this continues to move forward.
We only have another 3 or 4 minutes with Patrick and with Erica. So if you want to ask a quick question, I'll give you the number again. It's 312-255-8408. I think that's the concern. As I see it, so both of your organizations are preparing some comments to the Secretary. Is that where the comments would go, to the Secretary of Health and Human Services?
That's correct, yes.
And are you at this point in time asking for the public to do so, or is it too early to do that, or how does that – I know there's kind of a timing thing here.
Right. As I said, we are going to – and it's not just us. It's the Catholic Health Association in Washington, the Bishops' Conference in Washington, the Illinois Catholic Association. Mm-hmm. You know, we're all going to be submitting our comments, but we're going to wait until the end of September because
okay.
we're afraid if we submit our comments now that people on the opposition will take our arguments and try to refute our arguments. So we're going to wait to the last minute, end of September, get the comments in, see where the Secretary goes on this type of thing. And then at that point, our only option will be to go to our legislators and try to, as Erica said, push the legislation. At that point, I think we would definitely need the public's support. Right now, it's sort of inside Washington submitting comments to regulations that doesn't really involve the public so much as it will if we go to legislation.
And that was the purpose of our program here today, just to let people know that this is going on. I know it received some attention, earlier this week or last week when the Institute of Medicine came out with their recommendation, and then mm-hmm. the Secretary adopted that. But I don't think many people really understand that, as Erica articulated, the definition of religious employer. That's a very dangerous precedent that if that goes into rule and that's adopted, that as Erica said, means that in order to comply, I think what I heard her say is, well, that means that we only, what, hire Catholics in our belief system and we only serve Catholics in our institutions. Well, that's not what Christ called us to do. And, the secular law may say that, but I don't think there's any way that a Catholic organization is going to abide by that. Any other further things we need to talk about here? I think as we go forward, it looks like it's pretty clear cut. We have a regulation that's out there. Information will be coming forth from both of your organizations. I know the Catholic Conference of Illinois will be weighing in as well. We'll have the Catholic Charities directors doing the same thing as they continue also with their quest to continue contracting with the state for foster care and adoption issues. I also would just make that an additional plug that Patrick put out there. And Erica, give me the name of the bill again. It's kind of a long one.
It's the Respect for Rights of Conscience Act of 2011.
Okay, and that's both in the Senate and the House, and I don't know if we have bill numbers or not, but we'll keep people posted as that particular piece of legislation hopefully gains hearings in Congress in both the House and the Senate, and we'll see what happens with regard to that legislation as we go forward in these increasingly partisan difficult times. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. I think we had at least got the information out on the table, and please stay tuned to both the Catholic Conference website and as well as to Patrick's, and follow Resurrection too, because they're a big player in the healthcare market. Don't go away, everybody. We're going to switch gears here a little bit, and we're going to start talking a little bit about another issue that's been going on in the national arena, which is regard to healthcare reform—not healthcare, but immigration. And we're going to have in-studio guests as well as two people on the phone. So our thanks to Erica and Patrick for joining us. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Join Team Catholic Charities for the 2011 AIDS Run Walk in Grant Park on Saturday, October 1st as an active participant or sponsoring member. 100% of the funds raised by the team are returned to Catholic Charities HIV/AIDS case management programs, food pantry, and ministry in Cook and Lake Counties. For more information, please call the Catholic Charities Office of Volunteer Relations at 312-655-7322. Together, we can make a difference.
Most interment arrangements at the 43 Archdiocese of Chicago cemeteries are made through a pre-need plan. Your thoughtful planning today is economically prudent and contributes to peace of mind for you and your loved ones. Catholic Cemeteries counselors are available at your convenience. For more information, call 708-449-6100. Catholic Cemeteries, serving the Catholic community since 1837.
You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 950 AM.
Every Monday through Friday from 9 to 10 a.m., the Archdiocese of Chicago presents programming about the people, the issues, and the faith that affect all our lives. Thanks for staying with us here on Relevant Radio 950 AM. Now again, the Catholic Community of Faith.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Bob Gilligan with the Catholic Conference, and we're going to switch gears here a little bit. We were talking a little bit in the first half hour about some regulations out of Washington on healthcare reform, and now we're going to switch topics here a little bit and talk about something that's been in the news a lot. Last week, you may have seen a lot of news stories about some protests that were going on here in the Chicagoland area, and then also some news that came out after that with regard to the administration's decision on secured communities. And on the line with us, we have Allison Posner. She's with Clinic, which is the Catholic Legal Immigration Network. And we're very fortunate to have in studio with us Mark Fleming. He's an attorney with the National Immigration Justice Center. And also on the line, we have Mary Lou Gonzalez, our very own Mary Lou, who has been very active on immigration issues and trying to get the word out about what the impact is having on our community, on the strangers among us. Are you all on the line?
Yes.
Welcome, everybody. Great. Thanks for joining us so much. You know, I was following this story last week, and I've been following the secured communities issue for a long time. And, you know, last week it was kind of like a bit of whiplash. So maybe we should start at the end and go backwards. Mark, it looks like the administration came out with some information late in the week. Why don't we just talk about what the administration decided to do or not to do?
So in two different announcements.
Right.
2 weeks ago, they decided to terminate
Thanks.
All of the secure communities MOAs. Now, one would think when you terminate these agreements that would mean that the program is ending, but that's not the case. What they've decided is that the program will now be mandatory on all the states. And what Secure Communities is it's a fingerprint sharing program where when an individual is brought in to any state or local law enforcement, their fingerprints are screened not only for criminal charges or warrants, but also screened for immigration purposes. And so in effect, by making the program mandatory, the administration is saying that every state and local law enforcement will now also be an immigration officer.
Got it.
Now, late last week, obviously, with all of the news and backlash that you were referring to, the administration announced that they are going to do a review of all of the cases that are pending before immigration courts. Now, one of the stories that probably hasn't been followed as closely is that our immigration system, in part due to secure communities, is completely inundated with cases, often of low-level individuals that have no criminal history or were stopped for a minor traffic offense. And what the administration has determined is that they're going to review the 300,000 cases that are pending to admin close, administratively close. Now, that doesn't mean that they're terminating proceedings against the individual. They're just deciding not to prosecute them at this point. And effectively, administratively close individuals that aren't a risk to the community, who are not criminals, with the possibility of also getting a work visa, a work permit to work.
This is a good topic, and I'm glad all three of you are here with us, because I'm going to try to enlist callers. And the number that, if you want to call in with questions or comments or concern, it's 312-255-8408. I fully understand. This is one of the most controversial. I thought that if you thought the first half hour was controversial, that's nothing compared to this topic. I think a lot of Catholics and a lot of good people out there really struggle with this issue. They struggle with it from a, they see it as a fairness issue. You guys have all heard these arguments before in terms of, well, there's a lot of people that are trying to follow the rules and wait in line and come here. And why should we be giving people who are here who have allegedly broken the rules and now have some infraction, any sort of due deference whatsoever? And I know we hear that all the time. And I think, you know, this is a real tough topic for a lot of people out there. And that's why I wanted to have all three of you on here, because I need help. Mary Lou, I'm going to ask you. I know you're on the ground, and you have the firsthand experience. And I know Mark and Allison do as well. But I think you're engaged in the community and you're out there. Shed some light on what I just said.
Well, I think that you're absolutely right. It is probably one of the most controversial topics ever. And there's so many things and so many levels of perhaps not seeing things as they really are.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess for me, it's always the stories, it's the faces of the people that I encounter on a daily basis that really touch my heart and I think touch other people's heart. And that always makes it so much, much more relevant and much more, and a basis of making it understandable, because it is so complex. You know, as Mark indicated, you know, these are, this new announcement is a review of 300,000 cases, you know, of people who are in the process of deportation. And frankly, that's a great thing, and it's very optimistic, especially for the community, that some being affected so much, you know, where families are being separated and children are being left behind and spouses are being left behind. And as far as the secure communities, you know, not being able to opt out does not help either, because, mm-hmm. again, they are then affected by the latter part, you know, the deportation process, the fingerprinting and everything else that comes along with it. And there are families out there that truly don't want to be noticed, but definitely want to be part of a system and be accepted in a system that doesn't have anything to offer right now.
Yeah. Give us a profile of one of those people that you've dealt with.
Well, there's one case in particular that's very, very dear to my heart. And, you know, she's a parishioner of one of our parishes, and she's a single mom. She has two children. She's been in this country for 19 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long time. That's a life.
Sure.
You know, that's more than a decade. And she definitely, you know, is active in our parishes, and she, you know, she works hard, and she works in, you know, mm-hmm. in service, etc. Just kind of put yourself in her place just for a second and think to yourself, okay, I'm driving to work, you know, like we all do, you know, like you, we, everybody, and you're making a left-hand turn, and you forget to turn your signal on. And all of a sudden, you mm-hmm. hear the siren right behind you, right?
Sure, we've all been there.
We've all been there. You know, you're going to go, oh, man, what did I do?
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, God.
Right.
Exactly. I got to pull out my registration and my insurance and my driver's license.
Where's my insurance card? Right.
Exactly.
Yep.
Well, this is exactly what happened to her.
Yeah.
19 years in this country, she didn't have a driver's license mm-hmm. because her status is undocumented.
Mm-hmm.
And she was pulled over. And she was taken into custody because of no driver's license. And she did have insurance, thank God.
Mm-hmm.
And she was processed.
Yeah.
She is now in the process of deportation.
Yeah, now the two kids are standing there waiting for find out what happens to their mother, and we have a real sort of very convoluted problem on here. It's very difficult, I know, and I'm glad you were able to shed that personal story, because I think to the degree that people hear those stories or get to know those faces, it takes some of the sting out of this very, what can be sometimes a very controversial topic. Allison, try to bring it in here. The topic we're talking about with the secure communities, and what do you foresee now happening next? You have this decision out there. There's, I think Mark indicated, 300,000. Mm-hmm. Does the administration or do our officials have the capacity and the staff to wade through? That's a lot of cases. I mean, where does that all start? And I can't even get my arms around that.
Absolutely. Agreed. We're talking about, as we said, 300,000 cases, people who were brought to the U.S. as small children who would benefit from, the Dream Act that's come up in Congress a couple of times, veterans of the military, spouses of active duty military people, people with strong ties to the community, and people with family relationships, as we were just discussing. And it remains to be seen, really, how this is going to be implemented. We had this announcement last week, but really it was a real short announcement, and there's not a lot of detail yet that's been shared. And I will tell you, we've sort of heard something like this a year ago.
Oh, you did? Okay.
From the director of ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. They have, for a while, set out their priorities, and they have consistently prioritized those that are presenting a danger to national security or those who have a risk to public safety. And what we need now is to really make sure that they continue to stick to these priorities. So we'll just have to wait and see.
So none of you saw this coming? Or you heard about it?
Well, it's funny because, this is Mary Lou, mm-hmm. It's interesting because I was at the meeting with the director when he was here in Chicago.
Last week, the one that...
a month ago.
Another one. Okay.
Yeah, another one, exactly.
Okay.
And at that meeting, he talked about this. He mentioned this in this community invitation-only meeting, where he talked about we need to be able to have a review of all these cases. And he did say he wants to hear the stories. That's mm-hmm. one thing, because... I think I agree with Allison. 300,000 cases. It's like, okay, who has the time, right? And who really can do this? I mean, that's, I don't know how they're going to do it. I just don't understand Camp Phantom at all. But I, from my faith perspective, more than anything else, I do think, and it's hopeful at least. He said it in a meeting, in June or July. And they came out with the announcement, last week. Well, at least they're thinking about it.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah, yeah. So we're on our way, at least in terms of the implementation phase at some level. And I take it that the advocacy community is trying to reach out to the administration to get more details on how this would happen. Mark, is there any word yet, or is it too early?
Unfortunately is too early. And I would like to point out, looking at this announcement in relation to secure communities, well, of course, as the advocacy community, we welcome this mm-hmm. and a little bit more sensibility and judiciousness in how we apply our immigration laws. The reality is that this is only so far going to be applied to people that are already in removal proceedings. So anyone caught in secure communities or programs like that, we don't know if this is going to be continued going forward. And moreover, it happens at the end of the process.
So the program continues?
The program continues.
Yeah.
Okay. The program continues, but it's just people who have been caught already.
Exactly. And more to the point, it doesn't resolve the problems with the program in the sense that you have to rely on the good graces of the government mm-hmm. in order to come forward and talk to the police. Say you're a victim of violence. Say you're a witness to a crime. It doesn't deal with the distrust and fear that the immigration community has towards local police now because of secure communities.
Yeah. We're going to take a quick break here. We're coming up at 9:44 a.m. If you want to join this conversation, you have any questions about the topic, about secured communities, what it is and what it is not, and what it looks like going forward, please give us a call at 312-255-8408. That's 312-255-8408. We'll be right back.
I'm Father Robert Barron. Our new Catholicism documentary series and study program can now be pre-ordered online. Go to CatholicismPreorder.com. Will you help me introduce this one-of-a-kind film series and catechetical program to your parish, school, and diocese? Journey around the world and deep into the faith in this 10-part, 10-hour epic adventure. Learn more at CatholicismPreorder.com.
Game with the Catholic Charities Junior Board for a good cause. Saturday, November 12th is the Junior Board's signature fundraiser, and we hope you'll join us. The 5th annual Charities Royale Casino Night and Silent Auction will take place at the beautiful St. Ignatius College Prep. We have an A-list lineup with live music by Underwater People, delicious food from Cafe Bianda, 3 open bars, blackjack, craps, roulette, an incredible lineup of silent auction and raffle items, including 2 trips to the Bahamas, and much more. Tickets are only $80 and are on sale now at CatholicCharities.net/JRBoard. This black tie optional event is open to anyone over the age of 21. More than half of your ticket price will go directly to the Catholic Charities Emergency Assistance Programs, providing food, clothing, shelter, and other crucial emergency services to the poorest of the poor in Cook and Lake Counties. Game with us for a good cause. For details, call Lisa at 312-655-7932 or visit CatholicCharities.net/JRBoard.
You're invited to watch The Church, the Cardinal, and You this weekend on cable television. Here's host Graziano Marcheschi.
During the next half hour, we'll take you to the dedication of the Healing Garden at Holy Family Parish in Chicago. We'll attend a Catholic Charities photo exhibit with a unique twist. And we'll celebrate the 25th anniversary of Filipino ministry in the Archdiocese of Chicago.
For several interesting stories about the Archdiocese, please watch The Church, the Cardinal, and You this weekend on cable television. Go to www.archchicago.org and click on Radio TV for the time and cable channel in your area. That's www.archchicago.org. The Church, the Cardinal, and You. Compelling television about your Archdiocese.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Bob Gilligan of the Catholic Conference, and we're talking to Mark Fleming of the National Immigration Justice Center and Allison Posner. Allison, am I pronouncing your name right?
Yes, you are.
Posner. Wow, that's amazing. That's good. I knew that. Who's with Clinic, Catholic Legal Immigration Network, and Mary Lou Gonzalez, who works in the office in the Archdiocese, who's an immigrant education coordinator. We have a phone caller on the line, and we have a couple topics we've been kind of kicking around here. But let's take a phone call from Devin. Devin, welcome. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
A couple of issues. I think you were very right to the host of this, that this is a very contentious issue, and we need
sure.
to approach it with grace and with understanding. But you speak of the advocacy community. What about the advocacy community for our laws?
Mm-hmm.
People coming in, breaking our law, okay? That, I mean, whether you feel for them or not, and I do understand, I have employed illegals, and I understand what that's like.
Sure.
It's like, what about the advocacy for our laws, all right? They are breaking the law. That's the first thing. The second thing is, who's advocating to change the laws in their own country, where they are fleeing from? Mm-hmm. They're coming from places that have very poor economic systems. They're coming
yep.
from places that have a lot of corruption. Why are we not advocating for the home countries to change their policies mm-hmm. in order for them to stay in their own home countries or to come here legally? That's my question. Thank you very much.
Devin, absolutely, and very good points, and I appreciate the tone of your call, and you know, very legitimate points. I think, and there's a conversation to be had around here. Mark, do you want to? Yeah, let's. Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you for that call. I mean, a couple points, and I understand the frustration with the possibility that people are breaking the law. I mean, one point to consider with respect to a lot of the folks that we're talking about, folks that are often working in lower skilled labor. There is no legal way for them to come into the United States. Unfortunately, there is no line. And yet over, over a generation now, we've successfully hired 7 million individuals of this capacity, yet there's only a couple thousand visas for those sorts of folks to come legally to the United States. And there are certainly efforts, and I think that, the government and governments can do a better job of trying to promote development in home countries so that there isn't this necessity to move to the United States or other countries in search of a future, a better future for their families.
Allison, do you want to make a comment?
No, I agree. I think that we are always trying to reinforce the fact, as was just said, our grandparents and our grandparents' parents were able to just come to the United States and seek employment and a better life for their families, and that doesn't exist anymore. The government, the immigration rules have changed, and we're just saying, it might be a good idea to change them back because, as the caller indicated, these people are coming anyway. And so the idea is that we're going to need a comprehensive reform mechanism, even beyond what's happened in the past 2 weeks, mm-hmm. to really be able to get to the root of the problem.
Yeah. No, Devin's right. Devin brings up some very good points, and I'm very sensitive to that as well, in that I think we're in this sort of situation where we're trying to, in part, correct an injustice that's been going on for, well, at least since 1986 when we mm-hmm. did this, the first time, which, I think we can all admit now that when the Reagan administration granted to 3 million people citizenship opportunities, it didn't seem like we did it. That's all we did. We didn't close the border. We didn't create a just legal immigration system. So, I'm going to make numbers up. If the country required 100, pickers of onions, we could have 100 people to pick onions, that sort of thing. It wasn't done, and we just turned our back to it. And now we have all these people here, and as Mary Lou indicated, she's dealing with the woman who's been here for 19 years. Should she be here? No, probably not. But she's here, and now she's got a family. Now what do we do? It's a very difficult situation, and I think there's enough here that as people who have faith and people of goodwill could come together and figure this problem out. There's enough here to make a deal, if they say in politics. Unfortunately, I think the situation we find ourselves in at times is that, look, let's all admit it, it's easy to monopolize the conversation by taking a hard stance on either side, and that gets us nowhere. It's very frustrating. But I do think there's something here that we could do. I'm sorry, go ahead. Mary Lou, yes. Go ahead. Yeah, I'm sorry. I was going to ask you next.
Okay.
Yeah.
The other part of it is too. I think that's one of the reasons why the bishops, came out with that pastoral letter, in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like it's so far away now,
doesn't it?
But the pastoral letter does indicate this is not only a piece. The need to correct a broken system in the U.S. is critical. However, there's also a need to correct a broken system in other parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And the bishops made that very clear in their letter, that they really want this to be looked at in a very holistic way. Education is a big piece of the puzzle. We have to educate our own. We have to talk about the issue. We have to have dialogue about the issue. We have to hear the stories. And at the same time, we have to advocate for changes.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also a need to advocate on the other side of the border, right?
Right.
Make sure that they get the message that's very clear. It's like, okay, what are you guys going to do?
Right, exactly.
And
right.
How are you going to do this?
Right, right.
And that is happening. Very slow, but it's happening.
Isn't it? Well, that's good. We're glad to hear there's some progress on that front. It doesn't seem like it at times, but if there's evidence of that, that's reason to be a little optimistic about the future. Allison, do you anticipate that with the announcement from last week that there'll be any backlash or discussion of this when Congress reconvenes? It's like they don't have anything else to talk about, right? Let's put this on the pile.
Right.
Do you sense there's any appetite, or is it too soon?
Well, there's going to be, as you said, a lot on their plate. There's a lot of budget discussion
negotiating going on
that needs to get done in the fall. So I don't know. I hope, we're hearing that this last announcement came at the urging of a couple of members of Congress,
mm-hmm.
Dick Durbin, and the, you know, there's hope that the DREAM Act will be
revisited
in the upcoming days, which of course would provide assistance to students and young people who came to the United States as small children. So, you know, we continue to hope that there will be, that this conversation needs to continue in the halls of Congress.
Yeah, I think, too, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I'll say unfortunately. It looks like we're in the middle of the presidential campaign season has started. And albeit it's, we're a year or something away, it looks like we're there. And I'm sure this topic will be emerging as well in probably the Republican primary, maybe more so than the Democratic side, which is obviously not open to conversation at this point in time. So who knows where that goes. I know there was legislation in Springfield as well to deal with the Secured Communities Program, but it looks like that may not be needed anymore if it looks like there's this federal announcement and they're going to continue on, or do we still need to address the future with secured communities?
I think it still needs to be addressed, certainly.
Yeah.
I mean, the governor initially, when voluntarily joining the state to the program, made it very clear that the state of Illinois was going to focus on aliens who were individuals who are convicted of serious criminal offenses.
Okay.
And so that's the agreement that your governor signed. And of course, now his hands are tied, and now the Secure Communities Program goes along for however it is, whoever the federal government wants to investigate. So I do still think that there's room for change and room for states and individuals to speak up and say, you know, really, we have to go back to allowing states to choose to participate or not and how they wish to participate.
Mark, were you going to
say something? Well, just that. Unfortunately, they've taken a stance that it's out of the state's hands at this point, and I think there's things that the state can still do to control what their participation in this program will be.
So there's no, as far as any you are aware, there's the plans are still open in terms of how this would be implemented. So it's hard to say if I mean, obviously there's pockets of people who have been caught up in secure communities. I would imagine it's probably more in urban areas than rural areas, or is there any evidence to suggest that?
Based on population, yes.
Yeah,
but,
right.
But we are seeing a lot in all sorts of communities across, in our context, in Illinois.
Okay.
And often, I mean, the key point to recall is that it's at the point of arrest that these individuals are being identified. The government already was screening individuals in all state and federal prisons who have been convicted of crimes.
I knew that.
And so
it
really isn't targeting. How the program is set up isn't going to necessarily target the individuals who are serious criminals.
Great. Anything else to add, Mary Lou? I know you've been close to some of these people. I mean, what's on your horizon in terms of where you see the secured? I mean, I would imagine, are you dealing with a lot of those people then?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
As Mark indicated, it's. In Illinois, in particular, I get them, you know, from people who don't live in DuPage but work in DuPage. And then of course Chicago Heights and Harvey and all those rural places that are, you know, the south suburbs, lower south, Waukegan, of course, a lot of Lake County areas, places like that. You know, that they are actually. A lot of them, and it's very interesting, because a lot of them, what they have opted to do is ride their bikes. They don't drive anymore. They ride their bikes.
Well, that's fine now, but I don't think you're...
Yeah, exactly.
Going to be a little hard.
Come that winter, it's going to be a lot harder to do.
I got a hunch in about 3 or 4 months, that's not going to be a nice bike ride. Yeah,
that's right. Well. But it's looking at those options overall. And you, Bob, you mentioned... presidential campaign.
Right.
Unfortunately, I don't like to be a cynic on this stuff, but unfortunately, this is a lot of it, I believe, has to do with, again, that need to raise the issue.
Sure.
Because of that. You know?
Right.
You know, and I think that's a given, and we can all learn from that historically.
Yep. Unfortunately, that's probably the biggest challenge to solving this is the political arena. But that's the arena that we're in, and there's nothing much we can do with it. My thanks to Mark for joining us and coming in studio here today. I think this was a good conversation. I wish we had more time to delve into it and get some more callers. Mary Lou, thank you for all your work that you do out there in the community. And Allison, thanks for joining us this morning as we talked about the secured communities issues. And thanks, everybody, for listening. And we'll be back on the third Monday of the month of September. And until then, best of luck to everyone, and thanks for listening.